This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Hello and welcome to Tracks from the Edge, a show on Trek.fm where we take a look at all of the episodes of Star Trek Discovery and provide audio commentary for them. Today we're going to be taking a look at the 764th episode of Star Trek, Star Trek Short Treks, Season 2, Episode 2, The Trouble with Edward. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max.
So, a lot to say about this episode, I'm sure, but just to kind of preface it by the people involved with it. The writer on this episode is Graham Wagner, who I wasn't really familiar with any of his work, but I'm sure you were. He has written for a number of comedy shows over the years, including a couple episodes of The Office, 50 episodes of Portlandia, and 3 episodes of Silicon Valley. So it sounds like Portlandia is kind of, you know, whatever, it's like a variety show in a sense where you got like, I mean, everyone's credited on every episode, right? I mean, that's kind of how that
it's
goes.
Kind of a, it's basically a sketch comedy show. It's just a weird sketch comedy show.
Yeah. For The Office, he directed he wrote season 9, episode 8, The Target, and season 9, episode 16, Moving On. I don't know if you're familiar with either of those. And for Silicon Valley, he wrote Season 4, Episode 6, Customer Service, Season 4, Episode 8, The Keenan Vortex, and Season 5, Episode 5, Facial Recognition. Any of those good?
I can't think of a bad episode of Silicon Valley. So, yeah, those are good.
All right. And the episode is directed by Daniel Gray Longino, who we found out about this a while ago, like over the summer, but he's a director of also comedy stuff. The stuff that stood out to me that I checked out as soon as I heard was Who is America, the Sacha Baron Cohen show. Yeah, he did that. But he also directed 3 episodes of Pen 15, which I hear is very good.
Yep.
And he directed Frankenstein's Monster Frankenstein.
Oh, man. I got to watch that.
Yeah, I've heard good things. So, yes. Comedy. Should we get this thing started?
Oh, my God. Totally.
I mean, comedy, Star Trek. I don't know how you could do Star Trek as a comedy. It doesn't work. It's never been done before. I'm sure Lower Decks is going to be garbage. And should we watch this?
All right. That's a good place to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Ready? If you're ready, we're starting at 0 on the counter, and we will start this up in 3, 2, 1, start.
When are we going to stop telling people how to do this? Because I don't know anybody who would. It's just ridiculous. People remember the things. We don't need to explain what's going on.
I think, you know, repetition is good for these things. So here we are, The Trouble with Edward. Oh, look at that Enterprise. It's a good-looking ship. I was trying to look up to see exactly when this episode took place. I mean, the implication here seems to be that Spock is replacing the captain of the Cabot here, right?
Yeah, Rosa Salazar's character is leaving the Enterprise and Spock is taking over.
So theoretically, I would say this takes place before Q&A, like right before Q&A. That would be my guess, whatever. Maybe not, because she's like, you want to come up to the bridge? And so he wasn't a bridge officer yet. I don't know. I guess it doesn't really matter. But they don't say that she's like the head. They just say science officer, as in like there's only one.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily before or after Q&A. It's just, you know, it's somewhere around this time, and it doesn't really matter, because if it's after, it doesn't matter, because I mean, like, she's leaving the ship. She doesn't, like, Spock doesn't have to be replacing her in that role. She's just got a gig on another ship. I mean, whatever. It's not a big deal. I mean, it's not like they're going into battle, so she can just be a scientist.
Yeah. It's weird that she's got the gold uniform, though. I thought that was only for, you know, Constitution-class ships, but whatever. Speaking of ships, I like the design of the Cabot here. I think it's cool.
Yeah, the flying saucer with engines,
yeah,
like, smooshed into the saucer part.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so here she is, first day on the job, being a captain. Now, I mean, we haven't talked about this, but, you know, Rosa Salazar, people know her now as Alita Battle Angel in the new movie. Did you see Alita Battle Angel?
I did not.
See, I am personally offended by that.
Good.
And it makes me more angry than anything in this episode makes anybody on Twitter. Because we've been talking about the Battle Angel movie for almost as long as we've been talking about Star Trek, and now it's finally here, and you haven't even bothered to watch it. I don't want you to see it because I think you'd like it. I don't want you to see it because I think you'd hate it. I want you to see it so that we can end this conversation, which has been going on for 2 decades.
Okay? What I don't think you realize is that the conversation ended when Robert Rodriguez took it over.
No. It still has a James Cameron script and everything.
That doesn't matter.
You got to see it. It's good. So here's Edward. What do you think about this character?
I think it's a very funny addition to Star Trek. I'm in favor of, like, admitting that there have to be some stupid people. Like, there's no way around it. Some people in this world have to be dumb, and this guy is, and it works out well.
But I also like the fact that, like they say in the episode, like, he is like a brilliant biologist or whatever, you know? I mean, he says, like, I want to do this thing. I think that we can do this thing in order to accomplish this goal. And then he does it. You know, the problem, like everyone is trying to tell him, is like, that's not something that we should be doing. And that's mm-hmm. where his, you know, conflict comes in. You know, whether or not he thinks they should be doing it, he wants to prove that he can do it. And he can. He does. You know, like he says. But it's just like he cannot see that that's not a good idea. But I like that.
Right, but I mean, like, that, so he's got he's got some talents in bioengineering and genetic modification. He's still an idiot.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But he's a talented biologist. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. But
we don't know how he is comparatively. I mean, like, maybe the other biologists are like, yeah, I could totally do that, and he's like, but I can do it too. And
well, she says that he's a very talented scientist and stuff. But
yeah, and she seems like the sort of person who would say, yeah, you're talented enough to be a biologist with a lot of oversight and people helping you. But when you're in charge and you're the only person, it's a deal breaker.
Yeah. I do think that it kind of shows that she's maybe not the best commander in the world. You know, I mean, she got this job because she's a brilliant scientist. I'm not sure that her...
I do hate that line. I look forward to more fascinating work from you, and I'll put my hand on your shoulder because I'm trying to be a captain.
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, a lot of the stuff, like, her switching Edward to climatology, that seems like a bad idea, you know? Like he's like, I don't know anything about climates. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, you'll learn. I mean, that seems like a little, kind of a weird thing there. And then also, I mean, not that she doesn't have a point with everything that she's saying in this scene, but like what she would have to essentially do in order to draw these conclusions is kind of bad leadership, right? Like there are anonymous complaints and she starts talking to all of her subordinates to see who made those complaints, right? I mean, even if she knew, it's like, you don't do that because, I don't know, she's not a good captain, right? Like, at the end, you feel kind of bad for her because, like, 2 weeks after she got her command, she ended up with a ship which was unusable and one crew member dead, and it was really not her fault. But at the same time, regardless of any of that, she's not a good captain.
I don't think that that's what's going on. I think that she got this anonymous complaint. Somebody said, like, hey, you got an anonymous complaint, and it's the dumbest thing I've ever read. You got to listen to this. And she's like, okay, I can only think of one person that might be. And somebody's like, oh, I heard you got an anonymous complaint by Edward. And she's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Edward. And they're like, oh, no, it's 100% Edward. Don't even like think it's somebody else possibly, because it's definitely him, because that's like his deal, man.
I think all of that was probably true aside from them saying, I heard you got an anonymous complaint. I think it probably was like her saying to somebody, I got an anonymous complaint. Who are you telling me?
Something like that happens, and people tell people, and it spreads. You can't avoid it. It's the dumbest complaint, like imaginable.
It's of course a dumb complaint. Yes, I agree. Which is why like her superiors would not take it seriously or anything like that. But regardless, it doesn't matter. Anyway, it is kind of. Never mind.
Office stuff.
I was just thinking about some behind the scenes stuff going on in Star Trek, but it doesn't matter. Here we have like an interesting tribble montage, and you know, okay, so this is something which everyone's complaining about, right? They're saying that this basically rewrites canon, right? Because the implication has always been that tribbles are a natural species indigenous to this particular planet, and their population is able to, you know, stay limited because of the glommers, right? Isn't that what they're called? The tribble hunters. I've got a stuffed one sitting off to the side right now, but
that's including some additional material that I think is generally speaking sort of shunted over to the side of canon.
No, the animated series is canon. This is what I always say. The animated series is canon. No matter how bad that show is, you cannot deny that it exists.
Some people are complaining that this rewrites canon. You, by some people, you mean you, the person who you are?
No. Well, I did, right? I did. I had a problem with that. And then there was like one thing where I'm like, oh. But then I was watching it this morning with my wife, and she's like, you know, they're supposed to be doing this thing on the edge of Klingon space without the Klingons knowing about it, blah, blah, blah. This is obviously a huge security concern, and then they ended up, you know, having to do all this stuff, like dump these things on a planet, and the planet mm-hmm. needed to be evacuated and everything.
Yeah.
Like, there was probably a huge cover-up, right? I mean, we've already seen them say that they cannot, no one in Starfleet is allowed to say that Discovery existed for fear of something, which we have absolutely no idea how that works, right? So it's not unreasonable to assume that Starfleet was like, okay, we could possibly start a war with the Klingons over this. That's something that we don't want to do. So we're just going to quietly evacuate these people from this planet and say, oh, well, Tribbles, this is a species which exists on this particular planet, right? And not only that, but when you think about that, it does help to explain some other stuff, which was maybe problematic, like in Star Trek Into Darkness, when they're like, Bones, what are you doing with that Tribble?
Oh, boy.
And the Tribble's not replicating. Well, maybe in the Kelvin timeline, this never happened, and Tribbles are just, you know, little balls of fur.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people have a problem with this scene because they're like, how could all of this happen? And she's like, he was an idiot.
Yep.
I don't have any problem with that.
I think it's reasonable. Like, I don't think that there needs to be a cover-up. I think that when, if you include the animated series continuity, it's, sure, it's problematic. But since, generally speaking, they ignore that as much as possible, I think they get away with it. Because I like, in my head, when I was watching it, I was like, I don't know if this works. And then I was, like, running through the timeline. I was like, the only thing, the only outlier is the animated series episode. Everything else kind of fits, because the other Tribbles we've seen aren't replicating super fast. Basically, after this point in the timeline, they do kind of, like, reproduce like crazy. And so that is sort of the one thing that stands apart. So if this is part of the continuity, then that explains a lot of things, and it explains why people are able to have Tribbles on their desks and stuff. Like, if you had those in the previous, like, scenario where this didn't happen, then that would be stupid and reckless, because they kind of reproduce uncontrollably and they get everywhere, and you basically need to, like, kill them or get, like, all of them off your ship or you're screwed. I mean, like, it makes sense. This kind of has to be in there some way.
I mean, my theory with that was always that they just neuter Tribbles. I mean, we neuter cats and dogs, right?
But so, how? They're born pregnant.
That's true.
Like, they're born pregnant. Like, does that mean that the fetus that they're incubating is also pregnant?
I don't know.
How many layers down does this go?
Okay, so now, here we are with the credit cookie, which to me has surpassed all other credit cookies in terms of awesomeness. What do you think about this thing?
This came on, and my wife went, what? And I said nothing, and the entire thing elapsed, and I kind of was silent for a while, and then, like, after I turned everything off and switched over to Netflix, I was like, oh my God, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
I can't, like, there's no box to put this in. Like, this doesn't fit anything at all. Like, you're concerned about, like, the canon of the animated series being overwritten. I'm concerned about, like, whatever tenuous membrane made up the fourth wall of the Star Trek universe. Like, it just, like, popped, and there's goo all over all of us.
But isn't it amazing? Don't you love that goo?
I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know how I feel about it. Because, like, if it was, like, killer comedy, I'd have been like, all right, I'm on board. But it was kind of like a mid-level, like, Mad TV commercial parody.
I don't know. To me, that it worked extremely well. I mean, that was my favorite part of the episode, and maybe all of Star Trek. But the thing to me about it, like I have been trying to struggle with that. Like, how do you fit it into a box of any sort? And there are various ways. I mean, part of it is just this whole thing where it's like abandoning the need for a cohesive aesthetic and the idea that like it's all fake. So, you know, like if we saw this on an episode of X-Files, we wouldn't think twice about it, really, because X-Files would do this stuff all the time. And it makes me happy that now Star Trek is doing it. And that's cool. But the other thing about it is you can come up with a canon justification because YouTube exists in our reality. And we see stuff like this all the freaking time. And I think it's perfectly reasonable to assume that someone who was on board the Cabot or whatever was like, this was funny. And
it's funny how that guy almost killed us and then died.
And, you know, I'm going to make a fake commercial for a fake cereal and it'll be funny. And we'll show it at our Starfleet Film Fest.
Starfleet Film Festival?
Yeah, which now I want to see other things there. I want to see all sorts of films made by all sorts of filmmakers around the galaxy. But that's that. It's something which was made by somebody in continuity. It is.
I agree. Like my long-standing original series hypothesis, it has to be in-universe fiction.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to explain that for the people in the back who may not have heard in the past?
Okay, well, to justify the continuity errors present alone in the original series episodes between each other, and the sometimes weak visual effects and unconvincing makeup, my thought process was that because Captain Kirk and the Enterprise crew and their adventures have to exist in history for a lot of things to work in the Next Generation, those events did occur, but the show itself was a show about them made by people in the 23rd to 24th century trying to tell the story, and they had limited resources to tell that story. So they made this show, and its issues were the result of these people getting details wrong or just being sloppy, and the unconvincing visuals were the result of them working on a small budget. So that stood until Scotty went onto the holodeck and recreated the bridge of the Enterprise, and I was like, oh, that there it goes. That doesn't work anymore.
It could still work. What if Scotty was a big fan of the show that he stars in, right? And then
I know we've been through this before. Okay. You pitched the same idea, and I was like I think that's okay. It's just like it's harder to hold on to because it's not as solid because it gets real fuzzy there. Because you have to say like, well, Scotty did forget that Kirk died apparently,
yeah.
So maybe his memory's going, and he's been watching this show for so long that he's like, I'm pretty sure it did look like that. And it didn't look like what it does look like on Discovery when we see the Enterprise. So maybe that's what's up. And that is enough for me to make sense of it and like have it work in universe. But it does bug me that I have to go through those extra steps. But like I go through a lot of like mental gymnastics in order to make all these things work logically in context. So it's not outside of the normal level of work I do in order to enjoy things. I'm not crazy. You are.
There you go. All right. Well, should we wrap this up?
Oh my God, yeah.
All right. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Discovery, and the best place to do that is in the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group on Facebook. We will collect your feedback for postcards from the Edge, and you can also find us on Twitter at Trek.fm or send us email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose the Edge. Max, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter, JMax Hagel. That's all I can think of at the moment.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K. And you can find both of us right here on Trek.fm doing a show called Tracks on the Line, where we take a look at Star Trek Picard episodes and provide commentary for them. And you can also find us on FilmDamagePod.com doing a show called Film Damage when we're not busy doing commentaries for Star Trek episodes. We'd also like to thank our associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Lisa Slack, Tom Puleo, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mailet, Chris Trebuzio, and Brian Maloche. Thank you very much for your support. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. All right. Well, I guess that's it for this month. Next month, we get one more short trek, which I believe is a Enterprise short trek directed by Olatunde Osunsanmi. Not 100% positive on that, but I'm fairly certain. And then, yeah, a couple more in December, some animated stuff. But until then, we're pregnant with podcasts.